Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the 10th canto, chapter 46. The chapter is entitled Uddhava Visits Vrindavan. And today we're covering text 5. Maita Prayasham Preshte Duraste Gokulastriya Smarantyonga Vimuyanti Virahutkantya Vivala Maita Prayasham Preshte Duraste Gokulastriya Smarantyonga Vimuyanti Virahat Kantya Vivalaha Maita Prayasham Preshte Duraste Gokulastriya Smarantyonga Vimuyanti Virahot Kantya Vivalaha. Maita Prayasham Preshte Duraste Gokulastriya Smarantyonga Vimuyanti Virahot Kantya Vivaha Mai Hai Ta De Prayasham, of all objects of endearment. Preste, the most dear. Duraste, being far away. Gokulastriya, the women of Gokul. Smarantya, remembering. Anga, dear, in parentheses, Uddhava. Vimuyanti, become stunned. Viraha, of separation. Atkantya, by the anxiety. Vivalaha, overwhelmed. Translation purport by Zivangresi Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokul, I am the most cherished object of love. Thus, When they remember me, who am so far away, they are overwhelmed by anxiety of separation. Please repeat. My dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokul, I'm the most cherished object of love. That's when they remember me, who am so far away, they are overwhelmed by the anxiety of separation. Purport. Whatever is dear to us becomes an object of our possessiveness. Ultimately, the most dear object is our very soul or our self. Thus, things in a favorable relationship to ourself also become dear to us, and we try to possess them. According to Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura, among countless millions of such dear things, Sri Krishna is the most dear of all, even dearer than one's own self. The gopis had realized this fact, and thus they were stunned in separation from the Lord because of their intense love for him. Although they would have given up their lives, they were kept alive by the Lord's transcendental potency. Maita Prayasham Krishte Induraste Gokula Astriya Smarantyong Da Vimuyanti Vira Hot Antya Vivalaha. My dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokul, I'm the most cherished object of love. Thus, when they remember me, who am so far away, they're overwhelmed by the anxiety of separation. Om Aganatumananda Shaganjana Shivakaya Chakshura Umatangina Teshmaya Shri Gurudev Namaha. This, Vipralamba. Seva is considered by the Acharyas to be the highest platform of love of God, because it has the most intimacy and the most pleasure, and therefore Krishna derives the most pleasure from this. Most intimacy in the highest level of love, and Krishna gets the most pleasure from this, and the devotee also experiences the most transcendental bliss. So this is something that is very prominent. This Madhurya Ras is very prominent in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And Lord Chaitanya, his mission was to propagate the spontaneous devotion throughout the world. And Srila Prabhupada has been his empowered instrument in doing so. So the obvious question that would come to us, you know, in reviewing this verse in purport, you know, how do I get there? How do I actually achieve this level of intense love for Krishna so that it becomes even more intense when there's separation? How do I achieve such an exalted consciousness? And Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur were very cautious because of the degraded nature of this age of encouraging the practice of Raganuga Bhakti prior to qualification. And that's so easy to be qualified. So they stressed, just engagement, you know, in the preaching mission and strict sadhana practices, and then this will awaken. But it's a historic fact that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur never revealed to any of his disciples, at least the evidence of this, their sarup, you know, which is something that the guru does, you know, when one begins the practice of Raganuga Bhakti. So Of course, there are other ways that one understands that, you know, that revealed from within the heart or through another, you know, advanced Mahabhagavat. But this was a level of caution, you know, that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur utilized. He was actually criticized for this by some members of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition because he was so conservative in this way. And this is such a big part of our understanding. A big part of Gaudiya Vaishnavism is this spontaneous devotion. So, I can't speak from a very realized platform, you know, about this subject, but it seems to me that the key, you know, that what Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Instruction in Upadeshamrita, he focuses on the anga of chanting the holy name as a powerful means to bring us to this point. So I thought I would speak more about this than Vipralamba Bhav, Vipralamba Seva, because it actually opens the door to, you know, as we become purified. There's a very nice verse that says an awful lot. It's the 11th canto, 2nd chapter, 37th verse. It says a lot about our condition in the material realm, and also our relationship with Krishna and how to reinstate it. Bhayam dhiti yabini veshata shad ishari petasha viparino smriti tanmaya to buddha abhijetan bhaktyayaka yesham guru devatatma. Prabhupada quotes this in the 22nd chapter of Madhya Leela, and of course he didn't translate this in Bhagavatam. It was done by his disciples, but I kind of have a merged translation in my mind from having seen both. But fear overcomes the living entity when he misidentifies himself as the body. And this is because he's ishare petasha. He's turned away from the Lord. And then he undergoes, when he turns away from the Lord by the agency of the material energy, he undergoes a role reversal. Rather than seeing himself, vipariyo shmiti, rather than seeing himself as Krishna's servant, he becomes Krishna's competitor. He's kind of a little Krishna play-acting, you know, in this material world. He's, got his little Radharani, you know, he's got all the little facilities to try and play-act in this role of being the center of the universe. So then an intelligent person, the translation goes on, he accepts his spiritual master as his worshipable deity in his very heart and soul. And in this way, he executes devotional service. So this is the way out of it. Now, so we've gotten ourselves into a mess, you know, as a result of indiscretion. We've estranged ourselves from the Lord. And, what to do? You know, how do we get back? How do we become reinstated in our position? It may be that, we were in the spiritual world, we were sakas, or we were had a parental relationship with Krishna, or we were manjaris. You know, that's not clear yet. But, how do we get back there? Because it's a very challenging circumstance. I think this is something that all of us realize very quickly as when we start practicing Krishna consciousness. It's the material world is really heavy. You know, it's dukkhaliyam ashashvatam, and that becomes more and more evident the more we practice Krishna consciousness. So, and Prabhupada, just as Rupa Goswami stressed, the chanting of Hare Krishna as the anga that's the most significant for this age. Lord Chaitanya stressed it, of course. There's In the 22nd chapter of Madhulya, this is Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. Krishnadas Kaviraj quotes from the Padma Purana, Smarta Vyasadatam Vishnur, Vishmarta Vyo Najatucha, Sarve Vidhi Nashedashur Etayor Eva Kinkura. So one should always remember Krishna and one should never forget him. And all the rules and regulations of Shastras should simply be servants of those two principles. Okay, so then in the purport, Prabhupada again emphasizes the chanting of Hare Krishna. He says that the best way to remember Krishna is by chanting Hare Krishna. And then he says, of all the instructions given by the spiritual master, the chanting of 16 rounds is the most essential. So, how to do this in a way that brings a really, positive result as quickly as possible. So, there's several things that come to mind. You know, this attentiveness, pramada, this offense of chanting inattentively is considered, in Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes it as a root cause of all the other offenses. So, how to overcome this? Now, Prabhupada gave us a very powerful, kind of his most famous instruction on how to chant Hare Krishna in the Hare Krishna, what was it, the Hare Krishna Mantra Address, it was called, where he described the chanting. He compared it to the genuine cry of a child for his mother. So this crying, and this is a very intense emotion. Many of you have children, and some of them have grown, some of them are still young. But when a child hurts himself and goes crying to his mother, it's super intense. There's no time for thinking of something else. It's just like, that's it, I want my mommy. It's so intense. So this is the prescription for chanting Hare Krishna, the genuine cry of a child for its mother. And it doesn't leave room. If we're actually in this crying mood, please, Krishna, engage me in your service. Please reinstate me in your service. Please give me your mercy. So it's a cry. We're feeling the pains of material existence. And so it can be quite easy to cry. Matter of fact, in the 11th canto, 5th chapter, right after the famous Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sanko Pangashta Parshadam verse, this is the verse that describes Lord Chaitanya's, predicts Lord Chaitanya's advent. Intelligent persons engaged in a congregational chanting to worship the in Kali Yuga, to worship the incarnation of Godhead who's not blackish, who's accompanied by his servants, confidential companions, weapons. And so then after this, I think it's text 37 through 40, there's an amazing description of how the 37 describes how intelligent people worship Kali Yuga because Yuga Dharma is so powerful that it elevates people to the highest levels of Krishna consciousness. And then, 38 through 40, there's a description of how the residents of Satyuga aspire to take birth in Kali Yuga because Yuga Dharma is so powerful. And then there's a description in the purporting, which is basically taken from the commentary of the Acharyas, of how the suffering in Kali Yuga is so intense, and it describes some of the ways that people suffer, that people are forced to take shelter of the holy name. And when they do, then they become very, very advanced in Krishna consciousness. So, from this, these commentaries, in this little section, it becomes evident, in Kali Yuga, Sumanda What is it? Prayeno pa yasa sabya kala vashmen yuge jana manda sumanda sumatayo manda bhagya upadruta. You know, it's an incredibly intense age, you know, and there's so much facility for distress, and we experience that. But then the Yuga Dharma, what's the way to execute it in the most effective way is to cry. So we've got a lot to cry about in Kali Yuga, and that actually helps us. So, and then there is, you know, how to actually process the distress that we get. Okay, so this is one way. We have philosophy that's very powerful. There's an interesting reference. This is 1.9.19 in first canto, ninth chapter, passing of Bhishma Dev, text 19. Prabhupada describes different bhavs. Here we've got a bhav, you know, this is the Madhurya Ras, you know, Krishna, the gopis, and this deep, deep loving exchange. And Prabhupada in the purport to 1.9.19 describes the relationship between Jashoda Mai and Krishna, you know, this deep, loving relationship. You know, and Mother Jashoda tying Krishna up in the Damodar Leela, a very intimate exchange. And then the relationship between Arjuna and Krishna, such deep friendship. Krishna drove Arjuna's chariot. So, and then Prabhupada describes the tribulations a devotee undergoes is another transcendental bhav of the Lord. Now, this is a loving exchange. This is essentially what Prabhupada's saying. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Prabhupada quotes him, he comments that Krishna puts a devotee in distress to deepen his devotion. So it's actually, this is a very unusual expression of Krishna's love, to put a devotee into a difficult circumstance, to deepen his devotion, to you know, to kind of enable him to become disillusioned with the material energy, you know, to no longer look at it as a shelter, so that he can take deep shelter in his relationship, and he can actually cry to the holy name. So this is one methodology that Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas have given us, is to cry to the holy name. When I first got here, I attended Pran Govinda Prabhu's Saturday night Bhagavatam class, and he was citing a reference from the Adi Purana, which describes that one who cries to Krishna, and he purchases Krishna, he brings Krishna under his control. So it's a very powerful exchange that takes place, and this is a genuine cry from the heart. I remember when Satrup Maharaj published his Japa Reform notebook, he spoke about how, well, if you can't cry to the holy name, then cry that you can't cry, and if you can't cry that you can't cry, then cry that you can't cry that you can't cry. But on some level, there should be this crying. So it should come from the heart, a very sincere request to the Lord to engage me in your service, simultaneously disentangle me from material contamination. So that's a very powerful method. The other thing that comes to mind of how we can accelerate our advancement by effectively chanting the holy name, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj describes how we should string with the holy name and wear it around our neck the third text of Shishastakam, Chanadapi Sunichena, Tor Eva Sahishnuna, Amanina Mananena, Kirtaniya Siddhahari. So string it with the holy name around our neck, this mantra, this shloka. So that I guess we can understand that means that we should really meditate on what it means. There's four basic qualities that are unpacked in this shloka, Chanadapi, Sunichena. One should feel himself to be lower than the straw in the street. So this humility. And then Chororiva Sahishnuna, to be more tolerant than a tree. Now, interestingly enough, Bhajan Thakur, in his Sri Sanmodan Bhashya, this is one of his commentaries on Shishastakam, he describes this quality as compassion without envy, free from envy. Now, that seems like a kind of a long stretch of that more tolerant than a tree. So he unpacks that a bit for us and says that just like a tree, even for the woodcutter who's trying to cut him down, still provides shade, still provides fruit for that woodcutter. Okay, so the preacher, you know, no matter how difficult the circumstances are, no matter how unreceptive or maybe even envious, you know, if he runs into envious people, he perseveres. He still has compassion. He doesn't hate people that don't deal with him with, you know, in a nice way. He's trying his best to help them. He's got compassion deep within his heart. And but he tolerates. He's very tolerant and determined to go on with his preaching. And the two last qualities are free from false ego. Now, the devotee recognizes that this false ego, you know, it's a construct of his gross and subtle bodies, so he subdues it. You know, he doesn't let pridefulness come in, because he can just see this is just you know, craziness. With some bandha gyan, he can just recognize this is not something I should pursue or allow to become predominant in my consciousness. So he subdues this very consciously. And then manadena, you know, offers our respects to others. And this is, again, a function of some bandha gyan. You know, he sees every other person as an eternal servant of Krishna. So this respect just naturally comes. Now, there's two commentaries that come side by side, at least what I've got. This is done by Sarvabhavana. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that when one chants free from offense, then these four qualities automatically manifest. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says that in order to become offenseless in one chanting, one should cultivate these qualities. So they kind of, you know, either way, they're important. So, you know, sometimes when we actually think about what does it mean to be humble, you know, it's not such a, you know, sometimes it's a little evasive, you know, it's kind of like, well, sometimes we're show battle in our humility, you know, with well, Prabhu, you know, and then we don't so much feel it, but how to actually get there? You know, of course, by offenselessly chanting, you know, we get there. If we have an intense cry to the holy name, you know, we're very, very attentive, then it will gradually awaken. But also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some kind of tips as to how we can do this, you know, in his commentary on it, which I found quite helpful because it's such an important verse, you know, in this whole aspect of humility. Is sometimes a little difficult to assess. He starts out by saying, kind of going back to this, not to digress, but going back to this verse that I quoted in the beginning from the 11th canto, Bhayam Dhuti Yabhi Neveshatashad Ishari Petasho Viparyo Shmiti. So this role reversal, rather than seeing oneself as Krishna's servant, one becomes Krishna's competitor. So here's the gopis, you know, they're completely surrendered to Krishna. Their desire is only to please Krishna. This is what's described as love by Krishna Das Kaviraj in the fourth chapter of Adi Lila. And then the other end of the spectrum is a gross materialist. And what he's trying to do is satisfy his own senses. So the gopis are trying to satisfy Krishna's senses and please him. That's their very, very deep heartfelt desire. The gross materialist, his desire is to satisfy his own senses. So on this spectrum, you know, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, we move over. We gradually move to this position of just focusing entirely on trying to satisfy Krishna's senses, not worrying about our own. And, okay, so in doing that, you know, this is, you know, we could actually say, and this is an extremely humble position the gopis have, because they've given up, like in the previous verse, all of their bodily considerations, everything attached to their body, they just gave it up. They just wanted to serve Krishna. In one sense, we could say that this is what humility is all about, that I'm not concerned with satisfying myself, my senses, my mind. I'm simply concerned with satisfying Krishna. So that's one way of looking at it. Whereas this person over on this end of the spectrum, the gross materialist, all he's thinking about, how I can, you know, squeeze some pleasure out of this for myself. What a puffed up position. He's Krishna's competitor. Right? He's putting himself in the center of the universe. Extremely prideful. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so then back to Vinod Thakur in his presentation, you know, on Chanadapi Sunichena, he describes that when one begins to chant the holy name, then there's a natural kind of an awakening of an abhorrence to the mundane. He just said, this doesn't have anything to do with me. He doesn't want this. It's that it doesn't have to do with my spiritual life. And I'm in my constitutional position, I have nothing to do with the material. So this is something that starts awakening. And then he starts thinking, you know, I've estranged myself from the Lord, and therefore I've been strapped to the wheel of repeated birth and death. This is the thought process that someone that's awakening Chanadapi Sunichena. And as a result of being strapped to this wheel of repeated birth and death, I'm suffering untold miseries. And then he realizes that the, you know, by the association of his guru or gurus and other Vaishnavas, that the only way out of this situation is devotional service. I mean, there's no other recourse but to go this direction. He begins to understand this more and more and more. There's no relief from the distresses of this material world except by taking shelter of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. And then with devotional service he becomes reinstated. You know, he understands I'm being reinstated in my constitutional position, and in this way develop my love for Krishna. This is the, you know, the precursor to that. And then, you know, prior to being released, you know, from the chains of material existence, you know, he's focused on yukta vairagya, you know, and coupled with some bandhagyan, you know, he accepts only that which is necessary to keep body and soul together. This is another aspect of humility. You know, yukta vairagya is just using everything in Krishna's service, not using it for his own gratification. And, you know, then that, and then coupled with some bandhagyan, you know, he just proceeds with life. And just taking the very basic necessities, not trying to accumulate a lot for his own personal pleasure. Because when this consciousness is there, when the consumer consciousness of American culture is prominent, it really starts, it blocks one's understanding of his relationship with Krishna. So, I mean, chanting Hare Krishna is really a 24-hour engagement. You know, we should use, Prabhupada would say that we should use our best intelligence to chant Hare Krishna. Now, that seems like an odd statement. I mean, it doesn't seem like it takes that much intelligence to chant Hare Krishna. It's only 32 syllables and 16 words. You know, you say it over and over again. But what he meant by that is that we arrange our lives in such a way to optimize our chanting. So in other words, our whole lifestyle should be groomed in such a way that we can get the most out of our japa. We take rest early, we don't eat a huge meal so that we're wide awake. You know, don't eat a big meal before we take rest, so we're wide awake so we can very attentively chant. That's another form of inattention, you know, is to be drowsy, sleepy. So we give everything to that, you know, understanding this is the highest priority in our life. So we arrange everything in our life so that we can, you know, chant the best possible rounds. Now, that's not always so easy to do. Some of us have jobs, different occupations, different under the circumstances that we are in life. You know, some things maybe aren't so favorable, but we should in somehow or other move it in that direction so it becomes increasingly favorable. So this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, and he says also our Prarabdha Karma. You know, we should see that this has nothing to do with my real spiritual life. You know, that I've got wealth, or I'm handsome, or I'm ugly, or this distress, or that joy, material joy. Not really anything to do with my spiritual life. This is coming about as a result of my past activities. So in this way, he can be a little detached. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes how the false ego of a blade of grass is proportionate. Because, you know, it's not disproportionate like someone in a human body would just become so proud. It's just a natural proportion. So, and then he describes, you know, how we should just very, very, very actively try to subdue a pridefulness. You know, take credit for what really isn't ours. Okay, so this compassion without envy, you know, this Choror Eva Sahishnuna. Now this couples very much, and I think all of us can maybe have some realization of this, when we preach, like let's say we go on a preaching engagement, the next morning when we come to chant around, there seems to be increased facility. I remember for years I did book distribution, and you know, if I worked really hard on book distribution all day, when I came to chanting my rounds the next day, so much easier to chant attentively. There was always this taste, this reciprocation. So how is that? No, I mean, it's, first of all, we can, like from Bhagavad Gita, yaidam paramam guyam mad bhakteshva bidhashati bhaktim mayi param kritva mame vaishat yasamshaya. And then na cha tajman manusheshu kashtin mam priya kritama bhavitama, what is that, bhavitama? Okay, so anyway, you know, that there's no, if one who explains the supreme secret to my devotees, devotional service is guaranteed. And there's no servant more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one. It's extremely pleasing service. I mean, this is the whole idea. You know, we're, you know, on a platform of love, we do what is pleasing to Krishna and what is pleasing to Guru. So then there's a reciprocation. As we please Krishna, then daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dratiya, you know, we get some release from the modes. So this is you know, the trori vasahishnuna. It's a little different than I think the common understanding, no more talent than a tree. It kind of lines up with matra sparshas to kanteya, but actually it's compassion free from envy. This is the heart of the preacher. So this is an inducement to preach, you know, which is a, you know, an element of arranging our lives in such a way to optimize our chanting. And then Amanina, we spoke about this in Manadena. So This is the key, you know, to coming to this platform, you know, where we realize our sarup with Krishna, you know, and, you know, can start functioning on that level. We just move from this corner over to this corner, where we're humbly serving Krishna, and we're realized in our relationship with Him, and just dedicating every ounce of our energy to please Him. Okay, so I'll stop here, and let me just read the translation again. My dear Uddhava, for those women of Gokul, I'm the most cherished object of love. Thus, when they remember me, who am not far, not so far away, they are overwhelmed by anxiety of separation. Okay, is there any questions or comments? Marumati Mataji?
Thank you for your nice class. My question is there a way to cry for Krishna without necessarily experiencing material miseries and besides praying like Mother Kunti?
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of a preliminary stage, you know, when we cry only when we're in misery. Right? But then as advancement unfolds, because of the taste, you know, that we experience in chanting, you know, this cry kind of morphs into like, please Krishna, let me please you. And it's just, you know, this is my life, you know, this is what I need to do, you know, just please engage me in your service. Please reveal to me our relationship. You know, please let me understand you. And it's that kind of a cry, rather, you know, because it's a little bit, you know, that cry of pain, you know, of distress, and a little self-centered when you analyze it, right? We're a little bit on this side of the spectrum, you know. And as we move over, then the cry is, you know, more motivated by, you know, this, an evolving, you know, an awakening desire to please Krishna. So, you know, and then there are times, you know, when that crying is very difficult to really achieve. We're not in distress. We don't have the taste, you know. And so then what do we do then, you know? But this is the discipline, you know, that's expected of us, you know, by Srila Prabhupada, you know, our gurus. And what's enjoined in Shastra is that somehow or other we have this mood of crying, this intensity. So it's kind of like this intensity, Trivena Bhakti Yogena. You know, it's like it's, to advance in Krishna consciousness, it requires a great commitment. You know, we've really got to give ourselves to it. Otherwise, you know, we just get kicked around by the mode so heavily. I think all of us can observe, you know, if we chant very, very good rounds, you know, then our day goes much better. You know, like on Monday, I usually don't sleep in, but somehow I was really tired, and I slept in. And I came to Bhagavatam class, and I chanted like three rounds or something like that, you know? But the whole day, I was just being bashed by the material energies. It was so heavy. You know, nothing seemed to work right. I remember, and it was because I was, you know, I had spaced out, you know, on such an important part of my devotional life. I remember when I was a new devotee, this was before I took second initiation. I was on a traveling sankirtan party, real juncture in my devotional career of understanding. And we had four van parties that linked up with a motorhome, and we were in North Jersey, and I was with the New York Temple. Ramapad Swami was Ramapad Das Brahmachari at that time, and he was the temple president. And he came out to spend the night with us in the morning program. And, you know, we had the morning program, you know, in those days, all the Brahmacharis in the New York Sankirtan Department had to get up at 2 a.m. That was the standard. And so we would get up, and we had 2-gallon jugs, one jug for soaping up and one jug for washing up. They were milk jugs, you know, and that was like a big part of our, we had a one of those like crates that you see in like a Whole Food Market, you know, with that has like spinach in it or something. So it's like, well, actually, we actually had a BTG box. That was our possession. So actually the 2-gallon jugs was even more than what we had for our possession. So it was quite an austere life. So we get up at 2, and we start chanting, and then we have Mangalartik. And we had Mangalartik in the motorhome. And Rumpad Swami led Mangalartik. And then we chanted Japa together. And then we had Guru Puja and a Bhagavatam class. And I don't remember the specific verse that he gave the class on, but it was from the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, you know, a real famous chapter. So many verses are like Prabhupada's quoted throughout his books. But somehow or other, he focused on chanting good japa. And he gave examples of what he'd observed during the japa period of those that weren't chanting good japa. he gave the example of dive bomber japa, Hare Krishna, like that, you know, and then radar japa, you know, where like back to so-and-so's looking all over the place, looking at the crook, and obviously not paying attention, you know, to his japa. And so anyway, I walked out of that class realizing that my japa wasn't good, you know, I mean, and I really needed to work on it. So somehow or other, I got really inspired. The next day, I was going to try and chant the best japa I'd ever chanted in my life. And so I got up early, and I just was super intense. I probably, you know, Shesha knew me when I was a pretty new devotee, and I would chant super loud. So probably, you know, my chanting was so loud that Lakshmi Moni could hear me over in Bhakti Bhavan from here, you know. But anyway, I really was attentive. I was crying, you know, I was super passionate, but I was hearing most of the mantras. Now, what was amazing about it was that when I got out in book distribution, this whole experience, is that, this, and I think it was probably the best japa I'd ever chanted. And when I got out in book distribution, I had the biggest day I'd ever experienced on book distribution. Practically every single person that came my way that day was like the best person I meet in 3 weeks. It was incredible. I collected 3 times the amount of money that I would normally collect and 3 times the number of books. So I came back that day and I was in total ecstasy. And wow, what a discovery. You know, so naturally, I was pretty committed, you know, to chant really good rounds the next day. And so I did, you know, and the same thing happened. You know, it was like amazing, you know, how powerful that was. You know, and I could see a direct correlation between the quality of my rounds and, you know, my effectiveness in the service, which was really result-oriented. You know, you get your name read after Mangalartik every day, how many books you distributed, how much Lakshmi you collected. And, you know, a little hard to, you know, fully realize Chanadapi Suni Chena, you know, when this was going on. But still, the correlation between the japa. And I've talked to devotees about this over the years. And sometimes a lot of devotees don't see that correlation. You know, like if you're in management, it's different, you know, because there's just so many challenges. But if you really think about it, if you chant super good rounds, there's a huge correlation between, you know, your consciousness in the day. You know, like Prabhupada said, you know, if you smartavyasadatam vishnor vishmartavyo najachichit, you can really remember Krishna a lot better if you chant good rounds in the morning, isn't it? I mean, I think all of us can admit to that. You're at least going to be in a lot better Krishna consciousness. So that kind of commitment, if we can somehow either forge it into, you know, just, this is me, I'm going to do it every single day, then, you know, our advancement's pretty much guaranteed. If we do that, you know, and of course, if we add on top of this, you know, there's some very powerful philosophy that goes with this. You know, and that's given to us by Prabhupada's books, you know, how to really have strong intelligence. Rupa Goswami, in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, he describes that the qualification for advancing in Krishna consciousness is based upon faith in and knowledge of Shastra. Okay, so So what does it mean to advance? Advancing means to develop love and attraction for Krishna. This is what the gopis have. So if we study Prabhupada's books, and what's the means for our advancing? Okay, so that's the foundation. You know, this gives us this kind of the springboard for the advancement. You know, this faith in and knowledge of Shastra. But the actual facility that is the most prominent facility, the most prominent anga for our advancement is the chanting of Hare Krishna. So this is actually what takes us from this corner of the dais over to this corner. Nam, Rup, Guna, Lila, you know, the acharyas all describe this. You know, our param dhisva nivartate, you know, our higher taste, where does it come from? And we're pleasing Krishna by very, very effectively chanting and then rendering service. And if we're crying, please Krishna, engage me in your service, then we're super enthusiastic in our service. Because it just goes together. You can't really cry sincerely to Krishna to engage you in service if you don't do service. Right? I mean, it's not very sincere. You know, here's the facility. Okay, so go for it, Bubba. Right? I kind of like went off a little bit on answering your question, but you know, that's the whole thing. You know, this utsaha nishjaya daryat. You know, this is a triad of success in Krishna consciousness, and we apply it to our japa. You know, and from that, it's just like the foundation. You know, and it enables us to function within the antaranga shakti. Just like my experience on that day of book distribution, after giving everything I could to Chanku rounds, and my results were just phenomenal. I was so much bliss. You know, everybody that came my way immediately wanted, you know, they're reaching for their wallets even before I asked for a donation. On the other hand, if we're inattentive, if we don't have utsaha in our chanting, then Bahiranga Shakti. What is that? What is the function of the Bahiranga Shakti? It's to beat us, you know, to just kind of punish us for our independent spirit. Now, this not only, my experience is, not only is this individualized, but it's also, there can be a collective impact. Somehow or other, by Krishna's arrangement, I've been in situations since 1987 of taking messes and trying to revitalize them, you know, kind of like projects that fell apart, like in 87, somehow or other, I got the service of getting helping to get book distribution going again. You know, and what I found is that for a project, and not just that, then I took a post-Rameshwar temple that was a disaster and helped to revitalize it. I had the service of temple president. And then, you know, the Shastric study had kind of fallen into disarray, so I took on the service of starting the Mayapur Institute. And of course, this is all team effort. But if the team is committed to strong sadhana, there's much less Bahiranga Shakti and much more Antaranga Shakti in the formula. It just works that way. That's the design of the Lord, to encourage us. And we can see tangible results, but we can also experience within an awakening more and more of our own Krishna consciousness. So the Bahiranga Shakti, you know, this is how we get, you know, the distresses, right? So the Antaranga Shakti is the bliss. So Madame Mahan and I were talking a couple days ago. We have a choice. We either get kicked from behind, you know, by the Bahiranga Shakti, or we can be pulled ahead by the Antaranga Shakti. I went, so I should stop here. I think people are starting to leave. And I'll go to Shiva Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.